Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, Anne Ball answers a question from a listener in Pakistan who asked us to explain the differences between more and many. You will also hear a story from Pete Musto about the U.S. military base, Area 51, known in popular culture as a research center for government studies of aliens and spaceships. And we end our episode with an American story. This week, we present O. Henry's The Exact Science of Matrimony. But first, former President Barack Obama and his wife, Michelle, made their Hollywood debut on Wednesday with a film set in Industrial Ohio. The documentary American Factory looks at a former American automobile factory now operating as a Chinese business. The film was released Wednesday on Netflix. It is the streaming service's first joint project with the Obama's new production company, Higher Ground. Filmmakers Stephen Bognar and Julia Reichert said they learned of the Obamas' interest in the film as they were discussing placement of American Factory with Netflix. They were told the Obamas had seen the movie a few days earlier. Bognar and Reichert live in the Dayton, Ohio area. That is where Fuyao Glass replaced a General Motors factory. The filmmakers said they had first planned to explore a culture clash. But then, they said, the film deepened into a story about globalization and the rights of workers. Chinese businessman Cao De Wang owns the Fuyao plant. He employs about 2,200 American workers and 200 Chinese workers. The film gives a close-up look at how the workers from different cultures interact. For example, many Chinese at the factory say Americans do not work hard enough. And at one point, a Chinese worker explains that Americans are slow because they have fat fingers. The American workers question what they see as Chinese workers' unquestioned service to a company that robs them of time to enjoy life. Dave Burrows was the vice president of the factory. In one part of the film, he privately criticizes Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown for suggesting that the Chinese consider letting employees unionize. 2 years later, after having been dismissed, Burroughs insults Fuyao as he drives by the factory. Tensions rise when the factory does not meet production goals, leading to an angry disagreement about the right to unionize. Near the end of the film, an employee gives Cao a tour of the factory floor. The employee praises how automation gives Fuyao the chance to dismiss workers. Netflix worked in partnership with the Obamas' production company. Netflix released a brief recording Wednesday of the Obamas discussing why they were interested in the project. Michelle Obama said, "One of the many things I love about this film is that you let people tell their own story. I mean, you truly let people speak for themselves. And that is a powerful thing that you don't always see happen." Former President Obama said that they want people to look outside of their own experiences to understand the lives of others. That is what a good story does, he said. It helps all of us feel some solidarity with each other. Reichert said she has seen some commentary that the Obamas were interested in the film as a criticism of President Donald Trump. She said that suggestion is false. It has zero to do with Trump or Obama, or the political scene at all, she said. It's about the lives of average working people in the heartland. One of the American workers is shown growing close to Chinese workers at the factory. He invites several of them to a Thanksgiving dinner and to ride on his motorcycle. Later, the American worker is fired because it took him too long to use a computer. Reichert said she and Bognar were thankful to Cao for letting them into the factory. Bognar said, "We hope that people realize that without empathy for people who are different from you, you are not going to solve the political divide."
This week, we answer a question from Pakistan. Shahid writes, "Please explain about more and many. What is the difference between them?" Shahid, Pakistan. Dear Shahid, the words more and many do appear to be similar in meaning. Both are adjectives, and one is sometimes an adverb. Here is the difference. Many is used when something can be counted. Here is an example of how to use many in a question. How many people marched in the parade? Many is an adjective describing people. What kind of people? Many people. It might be a very large number, but you can still count the number of marchers in a parade. Now, we turn to the word more. You can use it with things you cannot count. Let's hear how to use it in a question. Would you like more tea? What kind of tea? The answer is more tea, but you are not specific about how much more. As an adverb, more is often used to compare two things, sometimes with the word than following it. There were more people on the train than usual. Here is another sentence where more is used as a comparison adverb. I like to eat more food than my brother. You are comparing two people, you and your brother. One person eats more food than the other. Keep coming to VOA Learning English, and you will learn more about American English. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
Officials in Nevada fear large numbers of people could be coming to the southern part of the state next month. Local officials this week approved two events for small desert towns near the United States military base known as Area 51. Area 51 is known in popular culture as a research center for government studies of creatures from outer space and alien spaceships. The officials have prepared an emergency declaration. They also plan to work with neighboring counties and the state government for events tied to an internet-based campaign called Storm Area 51. Area 51 was once a top-secret U.S. Air Force test area. The base is part of Nevada's Lincoln County, which is home to about 5,200 people. Lincoln County Commission Chairman Varlin Higby told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that he and other officials are worried about the possibility of large crowds. With the possibility of 35,000 to 40,000 people showing up, yeah, this is serious, said Higby. County officials are concerned that a sudden increase of visitors will crowd campsites, fuel stations, and public medical and telecommunications services. Officials count just 184 hotel rooms in the county, which is nearly two times the size of the state of Connecticut. The cell phone system is going to go down, Higby said. You get more than a couple of hundred people there, and it's going to crash. Cell service won't be available. The Little A. Lee Inn is a hotel in the community of Rachel, which has a population of about 50. The hotel's owners are planning a three-day music show called Alien Stock, named after the famous 1969 music festival Woodstock. Alien Stock is set to take place from September 20th through September 22nd. Alien co-owner Connie West has said she is expecting 10,000 people for the event. The Alien Research Center is a souvenir and gift shop in Hyco, a town of about 120 people. The store is planning an event of its own on September 20th and 21st. The events resulted from an internet post inviting people to run into the hard-to-reach test area in the Nevada desert. Area 51 has long been the center of conspiracy theories that the military uses the base to study aliens and test their technology. Lincoln County Sheriff Kerry Lee said earlier this week he was meeting with state emergency planning officials. County officials have also met with officials from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, the sheriffs of two nearby counties, and the Nevada Highway Patrol. Eric Holt, county emergency manager, asked commissioners to pre-sign the emergency declaration. Higby, who has the power to make a declaration, said it would let Lincoln County seek financial help and emergency personnel from the state. We don't know where or how far our resources are going to go, he said. A lot of it is equipment and financing. The county only has so much money to deal with. Higby added that visitors should not try to enter Area 51. We don't want them going down to government property. It will probably be blocked off, he said. We don't want civilian people in contact with the military at all. That will get ugly. The conditional permits require festival and event organizers to provide final plans to the Lincoln County Commission by September 3rd. I'm Pete Musto.
Our story today is called The Exact Science of Matrimony. It was written by O. Henry. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Jeff Peters and Andy Tucker could never be trusted. One day, the two men decided to open a marriage business to make some quick and easy money. The first thing they did was to write an advertisement to be published in newspapers. Their advertisement read like this: "A charming widow, beautiful and home-loving, would like to remarry. She is only 32 years old. She has $3,000 in cash and owns valuable property in the country. She would like a poor man with a loving heart. No objection to an older man or to one who is not good-looking. But he needs to be faithful and true, can take care of property, and invest money with good judgment. Give address with details about yourself. Signed, Lonely, care of Peters and Tucker, Agents, Cairo, Illinois." When they finished writing the ad, Jeff Peters said to Andy Tucker, "So far, so good. And now, where is the lady?" Andy gave Jeff an unhappy look. "What does a marriage advertisement have to do with a lady?" he asked. "Now listen," Jeff answered. "You know my rule, Andy. In all illegal activities, we must obey the law in every detail. Something offered for sale must exist. It must be seen. You must be able to produce it. That is how I have kept out of trouble with the police. Now, for this business to work, we must be able to produce a charming widow, with or without the beauty, as advertised." "Well," said Andy, after thinking it over, "it might be better if the United States Post Office should decide to investigate our marriage agency. But where can you hope to find a widow who would waste her time on a marriage proposal that has no marriage in it?" Jeff said that he knew just such a woman. "An old friend of mine, Zeke Trotter," he said, "used to work in a tent show. He made his wife a widow by drinking too much of the wrong kind of alcohol. I used to stop at their house often. I think we can get her to work with us." Mrs. Zeke Trotter lived in a small town not far away. Jeff Peters went out to see her. She was not beautiful and not so young, but she seemed all right to Jeff. "Is this an honest deal you're putting on, Mr. Peters?" she asked when he told her what he wanted.
"Mrs. Trotter," said Jeff, 3,000 men will seek to marry you to get your money and property. What are they prepared to give in exchange? Nothing. Nothing but the bones of a lazy, dishonest, good-for-nothing fortune seeker. We will teach them something. This will be a great moral campaign. Does that satisfy you? It does, Mr. Peters, she said. But what will my duties be? Do I have to personally reject these 3,000 good-for-nothings you speak of? Or can I throw them out in bunches? Jeff explained that her job would be easy. She would live in a quiet hotel and have no work to do. He and Andy would take care of all letters and the business end of the plot. But he warned her that some of the men might come to see her in person. Then she would have to meet them face to face and reject them. She would be paid $25 a week and hotel costs. Give me 5 minutes to get ready, Mrs. Trotter said. Then you can start paying me. So Jeff took her to the city and put her in a hotel far enough from Jeff and Andy's place to cause no suspicion. Jeff Peters and Andy Tucker were now ready to catch a few fish on the hook. They placed their advertisement in newspapers across the country. They put $2,000 in a bank in Mrs. Trotter's name. They gave her the bank book to show if anyone questioned the honesty of their marriage agency. They were sure that Mrs. Trotter could be trusted and that it was safe to leave the money in her name. Their ad in the newspapers started a flood of letters, more than 100 a day. Jeff and Andy worked 12 hours a day answering them. Most of the men wrote that they had lost their jobs. The world misunderstood them. But they were full of love and other good qualities. Jeff and Andy answered every letter with high praise for the writer. They asked the men to send a photograph and more details. And they told them to include $2 to cover the cost of giving the second letter to the charming widow. Almost all the men sent in the $2 requested. It seemed to be an easy business. Still, Andy and Jeff often spoke about the trouble of cutting open envelopes and taking the money out. A few of the men came in person. Jeff and Andy sent them to Mrs. Trotter, and she did the rest. Soon, Jeff and Andy were receiving about $200 a day. One day, a federal postal inspector came by. But Jeff satisfied him that they were not breaking the law. After about 3 months, Jeff and Andy had collected more than $5,000, and they decided it was time to stop. Some people were beginning to question their honesty, and Mrs. Trotter seemed to have grown tired of her job. Too many men had come to see her, and she did not like that. Jeff went to Mrs. Trotter's hotel to pay her what she was owed and to say goodbye. He also wanted her to repay the $2,000 that was put into her bank account. When Jeff walked into the room, she was crying like a child who did not want to go to school.
"Now, now," he said, "what's it all about? Somebody hurt you? Are you getting homesick?"
"No, Mr. Peters," she said. "I'll tell you. You were always a good friend of my husband, Zeke. Mr. Peters, I am in love. I just love a man so hard, I can't bear not to get him. He's just the kind I've always had in mind.
Then take him, said Jeff. Does he feel the same way about you?
He does, Mrs. Trotter answered. But there's a problem. He is one of the men who've been coming to see me in answer to your advertisement. And he will not marry me unless I give him the $2,000. His name is William Wilkinson.
Jeff felt sorry for her. He said he would be glad to let her give the $2,000 to Mr. Wilkinson so that she could be happy. But he said he had to talk to his partner about it. Jeff returned to his hotel and discussed it with Andy.
I was expecting something like this, Andy said. You can't trust a woman to stick with you in any plan that involves her emotions.
Jeff said it was a sad thing to think that they were the cause of the breaking of a woman's heart. Andy agreed with him.
I'll tell you what I'm willing to do, said Andy. Jeff, you have always been a man of a soft and generous heart. Perhaps I've been too hard and worldly and suspicious. For once, I will meet you halfway. Go to Mrs. Trotter. Tell her to take the $2,000 out of the bank and give it to this Wilkinson fellow and be happy.
Jeff shook Andy's hand for a long time. Then he went back to Mrs. Trotter. She cried as hard for joy as she had done for sorrow. Two days later, Jeff and Andy prepared to leave town.
Wouldn't you like to go meet Mrs. Trotter once before we leave? Jeff asked Andy. She'd like to express her thanks to you. Why, I guess not, Andy said. I think we should hurry and catch the train.
Jeff was putting all the money they had received in a belt he tied around his body. Then Andy took a large amount of money out of his pocket and asked Jeff to put it together with the other money.
What's this? Jeff asked. It's Mrs. Trotter's $2,000, said Andy. How do you come to have it? Jeff asked. Mrs. Trotter gave it to me, Andy answered. I have been calling on her 3 nights a week for more than a month. Then you are William Wilkinson? Jeff asked. I was, Andy said.
And that's our program for today. We will be back tomorrow with more stories from around the world. Thanks for listening. I'm Ashley Thompson.